Yes, indeed. This is the way to open a big week with a big voice like Ethel Merman. Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday morning in the city. The rain seems to have moved away for a while because it's sunny out right now. As you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. If you're listening to us live, you're listening on 90.1 FM. If you're listening to us online, it's at kkfi.org. If you're listening to the podcast, that's going to take a few days. But hey, a lot of our shows are on podcasts. I have podcasts going back probably a couple of years by now. So literally, the show never has to end. Now, just how frightening is that? You can just keep listening over and over and over. You think anybody does that? Probably not.
Somebody might.
But we have a lot of fun here on the Arts Magazine Show as we try to bring you what's going on in the area as far as theater, other artistic endeavors, the ballet, symphony, all kinds of things like that. Today, we're going to talk about a joint production between the theater department of UMKC and Kansas City Actors Theater of Kansas City. They are producing King Lear. And if you know the story of King Lear, which we'll tell you in a bit, but King Lear is kind of slowly descends into madness. Even in Shakespeare's day, they worried about our leaders in that way. But they are producing the show of King Lear, and when they decided to pick this play, who knows what they had in mind. But here with us to tell us all about the co-production of King Lear are two of the performers in the show. Khalif Gillette is with us. He has a lot of credits at the University of California, Riverside. He plays the role of Edmund in the show. He has done musical as well. He plans on going to New York after he leaves here. People go to New York. Sometimes they come back, Khalif.
Exactly.
Sometimes they come back here because there's work here. He's part of the MFA program at UMKC. He's also a photographer, a graphic artist, and a playwright as well. We may explore that later on in the show. Chelsea Kinzer is with us as well. She plays the role of Cordelia. She hails, well, she doesn't hail, but she attended East Tennessee State University. She's also a musician specializing in like country folk, the alternative Appalachian style music.
Appalachian.
There are shows here on the weekend that specialize in that. You might want to look into maybe getting on one of those shows.
Definitely.
While you're in
interested
town.
Interested in that.
Yes, and they can, if you have CDs of your work, they probably play that as well.
Cool.
So you may be hearing more of her on this station.
Let's hope so.
In the future, from the Appalachian area as well. It's theater and dance, and is, of course, a singer-songwriter. So we might discuss that a little later on. But King Lear,
yeah,
production of UMKC and Kansas City Actors Theater. So the two groups kind of blend together to do King Lear. Shakespeare is always difficult to do, I know
right. That.
How's it going so far?
It's going great. We've got most of our cast is from the UMKC Theater Department, except for the equity actors in the show. It's starring Peggy Friesen, Mark Robbins, Logan Black, and Theodore Sweats. But the rest of us are UMKC grad students and undergrad students. And all of the designers are student designers as well. The set, costumes, lights, sound, all of it, UMKC grad students. And so it's just been a really great experience to mix and mingle into the community. And some of our design students in our third year acting class, they've gotten to work with some people in the community. But for us in the second year acting class, this is our Kansas City stage debut, really.
Yeah, it's our first professional production. And I think it's a pretty good first production to be in.
Definitely. Huge show. Very epic.
Yeah.
King Lear. When you hear a short little synopsis of it, they always say, well, a man who descended into madness. Does that happen?
Basically, he goes far into madness. Basically, it's about the aging king of Britain, King Lear. He decides to step down from the throne and to leave the country to his three daughters. But one of his daughters, the youngest, Cordelia, sitting right next to me, she decides that she doesn't want to really play by his rules.
Well, he goes into this speech about he wants his daughters to flatter him, and whoever says they love him the most gets the most land. And so Cordelia don't play. So she doesn't want to play that game with him. So he banishes her. And then everything just kind of falls apart after that. And his relationship with his daughters starts to deteriorate as he's deteriorating mentally. There's a lot of familial strife throughout the play, and it is a tragedy, so mostly everyone dies.
Oh, sure.
Exactly. And at the same time that King Lear's family is having all this strife and going through this all, the Gloucesters, who Gloucester is a nobleman who is like Lear's other confidant besides Kent, his family as well, that's my father, Gloucester, he is in my life been like ashamed to acknowledge me because I'm his bastard son. I'm the youngest of his two sons. And so now my character, like Cordelia, is like taking a stand now and doing something about this. Like, I don't have to live within these customary traditions that people think bastards should be the not loved kid or the one that doesn't get any land or power. And so Edmund, my character, really decides to take matters into his own hands, and he ends up, you know, doing a lot that changes a lot of people's lives, not exactly for the better.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of elements. People say all the time, people talk about how Shakespeare is copied by modern shows.
Yeah, very much.
Sounds like Shakespeare himself probably borrowed some things from The Prodigal Son, perhaps.
Exactly.
Some other Cain and Abel.
Right.
As you both described the situation,
very
I thought both
so.
Of those. So yeah. Shakespeare himself got ideas from from other media, if you call the Bible other media, to round out the story.
Right.
But these are stories that are timeless. They happen all the time. There are some elements of perhaps, if you remember the show Dallas, the competing, who would win the kingdom.
Right.
There's always a competition going on.
Exactly.
And it often got very cutthroat. Is this between the daughters, is this a very cutthroat competition? You didn't want to play, so you were banished. So you must have had an alternative plan of some kind.
No, well, I am about to be married, and I have two suitors, the Duke of Burgundy?
Yes,
Duke of Burgundy and the King of France. And so King Lear says, you're not going to play by my game, so bring in your suitors and they're going to take you away and you're not welcome here anymore. Yeah. So the Duke of Burgundy is like, but she still has a dowry, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, nope, she has absolutely nothing. And Burgundy's like, I'm
sorry,
out.
Can't do it.
And the King of France is like, I'll take you, Cordelia, and I'll take you away from all of this terrible stuff and you'll be Queen of France. And then after that, it's kind of like battling for land and for power between the sisters, and there's armies on every side and fighting and swords and
because I'm coming in there trying to, you know, get away from my bastard nature that everyone thinks I have, I'm trying to get in there and get my way to some of that land too. And because it's only split between the two daughters, you can imagine there is some journey to get that land for Edmund.
Yeah.
You have to marry one of the daughters.
Yep.
In typical soap opera style, that's what you have to do.
If that's a way, there are many ways that he goes about it.
Yeah. So as you see, there's a lot of, even in those days,
exactly,
there's a lot of jockeying for position, it sounds like.
Very much so.
And things like that. Tell us about some of the performers that you work with in the show. You mentioned Mark Robbins earlier.
Mark Robbins, he is playing my father. And it's been great working with Mark. He is an absolutely hilarious person to like be behind the scenes with, and just in between like running things, he just cracks us all up. But at the same time, watching him work is just so fascinating. He's very captivating, and getting to have him as a scene partner is just it's a great experience. And and I don't actually get to have any scenes with Peggy Friesen. She's playing the fool. And
she's incredible as well.
She's no fool.
She's incredible.
She plays the harp. Has she played the harp for you?
Yeah, she was telling us about that, her like experience playing the harp. And I'm like, this woman is amazing. Yeah, and Logan Black, he was an alumni of the MFA acting program here. And so he graduated a couple of years ago. And he's playing Kent. Cordelia and Kent have a very special relationship in the show.
Yeah. I would say having all of those, I've never been in a production with equity actors before, like real professional working actors. And even just during the first read-through that we had, it was captivating to watch them work and see how much they filled the play while we were just sitting around a table and reading it. And then to watch it come to life has been a real pleasure, and I'm very grateful for the experience that we've had.
Well, you will be doing that yourself,
yeah.
I'm sure, as experience goes on. You'll be doing the same thing, and people will be saying that about you.
Exactly.
Let's hope so.
We learn so much doing this. Like, we have all of the experience training in our classes, and Theodore Sweats, who's playing King Lear, he's our head of acting. So we have all of these acting classes with him, but now we actually get to watch him at work and watch him make these bold choices that he's always telling us to make. He's like, make bold choices, work off of your impulses. And now it's like we get to see this every day, just right here, see all these actors working from that very impulsive state and making these strong choices. And I'm just like, okay, how can I make these strong choices in my scene? It's like,
well, look at it this way, and he's probably told you this, but you know, yes, make a bold choice. You can always pull back if you need to.
Exactly.
You might as well try it out to see how it drives.
Exactly.
Yeah, just see how it works out.
Like, always give a director too much and have them tell you to scale it back, then not give them enough and have them have to pull it out of you. And Ryan has a very clear image of the show and what he wanted for it. And it was a real challenge for me, because what Ryan wanted of Edmund was something that I never actually heard of Edmund before, because I wasn't too familiar with King Lear, but I have seen a few like clips and like monologues from it. And whenever I heard people talk about Edmund, they talk about it as like, basically the twiddling his mustache bad guy almost. And Ryan wanted to take that in like the completely opposite direction. And he's like, he was like, make Edmund lighter, make him lighter, because it has to be someone who we don't automatically feel, oh, this is a bad guy. We want to sympathize with this guy, but also see where his lightness come from, where his like, his idea that what they think of me is like complete mockery. It's ridiculous what they think of me. And so now I'm going to go on this journey with you, the audience, and show you like this plan that I'm devising, and like how interesting it is to see Edmund go from that sort of, do you see how ridiculous it is? Like what the people of this world think, into the caring and the dutiful son and the brother that's worried for Edgar, my brother, and see him kind of like play with these people as pawns on the chessboard. And he plays that role like so effortlessly, just switching in and out of it throughout the entire show. And
sure. So you're actually half brother sister.
No, we aren't. She's a part of the Lear family. It's Cordelia, Goneril, and Regan. They're sisters. And then Edmund and Edgar, we're brothers.
Okay.
And, yeah.
It gets a little confusing sometimes in Shakespeare.
It's a lot to handle, for sure. There's a lot going on.
Shakespeare is always a lot to handle. They say that he bases a lot of his plays on this probably falling in the tragedy / historical drama vein of things.
Yeah.
But based it on things he saw and learned about during his life, and things were quite notorious in jolly old England.
Yeah, a friend of mine had mentioned that if you think of, sometimes Shakespeare is really hard to follow. It's a heightened language, when it's not done well, then it's hard to understand what is going on. But she said something that has really resonated with me. If you think of all of the characters in the play as different aspects of yourself, like coming together and telling a story, I just thought that was really cool. And Theodore Sweats, our teacher, told us that Shakespeare is like an epic fairy tale. And so that kind of helped me be like, oh, this is a fairy tale, and it's got to be epic, because it's hard with the circumstances of the play. They're so extreme, and to be able to serve that up on a platter to the audience is really hard when you're coming at it from a contemporary mindset, such as myself. So what I've been struggling with is, how can I make this epic? It's a crazy story. It's insane. So just believe in the circumstances and throw yourself into this world and serve it and share and be passionate about what you're talking about and connect with your partners on stage. And I feel like this production has a lot of really grounded clarity and lots of partnering and sharing with the audience. And we're every night before we go on stage, we're all just like, break a leg and have fun. Let's have fun and tell this story, this epic story. And the lights and the costumes and the set, it's just so incredible to be a part of this production. I can't wait for everybody to come and see it.
And the next opportunity to do that would be tonight, by the way. Mm-hmm. A industry night performance on Monday the 16th. That is tonight at 7:30 p.m. Show's going on at the Spencer Theater for the Performing Arts at the Performing Arts Center on the campus of UMKC. The address is 2121 Cherry. The number to call for more information, the Ticketmaster number, 816-235-6222. There's also a number listed for Actors Theater. I don't know if they're offering tickets there, but you can go to kcactorstheater.org, click through, and get tickets online if you choose to do that. So tonight, Monday, is that the end of the...
That's the end of previews. Then we open on Wednesday.
On Wednesday the 18th at 7:30, other performances. On Thursday the 19th at 7:30, Friday the 20th at 7:30, Saturday the 21st at 7:30, and a matinee on Sunday the 22nd at 2 o'clock p.m. at, of course, the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC, the Performing Arts Center, 2121 Chair, where all the rep performances are as well. So if you attend those, that's the same place where you're going for this. We're talking with two of the actors in the show, Khalif Gillette and Chelsea Kinzer. They are in the show. They are part of the prestigious MFA program at UMKC, which is very difficult to get into. The aforementioned Theodore Sweats has been on the show before, and we talked about that process. He goes, sometimes he'll go around and see people perform. He'll conduct interviews with them, but it's very difficult to get in. I asked you earlier, how many, four males, four females, mm-hmm. are all that get in each and every year?
Yep.
Yeah, they do it every 2 years. There's always a gap year. So right now we only have a second and third year class, mm-hmm. and next year we'll have a first and third year class. So it kind of like cycles through. So only 16 students at a time.
What was that like to go through that process? Did you realize how much you were bucking the odds getting in?
If you would have asked me a year and a half ago what I'd be doing now, I never would have guessed that this would be my life. I was living in Tennessee. I was bartending and waiting tables and playing music. And my mom and one of my old professors at East Tennessee State University were like, you got to go to grad school. And I was like, what am I going to go to grad school for? And they're like, why don't you go for acting, which is what your degree is in, Chelsea? Come on. And so then we all got one of my mentors, Kara Harker, who's the head of the dance department at ETSU, was like, I'll be your coach. You're going to audition for IRTA in February, which is University Resident Theater Association. And so they have auditions in New York, Chicago, and San Francisco. And recruiters come from all over the nation to these three spots and watch hundreds, thousands of people audition and recruit them. And I auditioned in Chicago.
I auditioned in San Francisco.
And UMKC called. That was the only call back that I got. And I had gone to a workshop earlier that day that was like, you want to pick up on the vibe of the room. And if you're really vibing with the recruiters, then that's a really good sign. So I got in the room and I was vibing with Carla and Stephanie. And I was like, oh man, please, please ask me to be in your school because this is so incredible. And the waiting period was like, am I going to be in grad school? Am I not going to be in grad school? And then finally I got the phone call that was like, congratulations. And of course I burst into tears and called my mom and she burst into tears. And then a couple months later, we're hitting the road and packing up my entire life and moving to Kansas City. And now I'm in King Lear and this is so crazy. Nice.
You'll be here for how long?
I graduated in 2019, but I'm planning on sticking around Kansas City because there's so much work here and the theater scene is fantastic. So I'm hoping to build up some more professional credits in the upcoming years.
And this is a good start. What about Khalif?
Yeah, I came straight out of undergrad. And so I was doing a lot of shows in undergrad, musicals, and by the end of my senior year, I was started writing my own plays and producing those. I created some like student films and things, but I felt like I didn't have enough knowledge under my belt, and so I was like, you know what, I'll try this ERTA program, since I knew some other friends who graduated before me who tried it. And so I was like, I'll give it a shot. I wasn't really expecting anything from it. And I auditioned. I didn't really have anybody who coached me to help me out with it. And so I was like, I'll give this a shot. I'll just prepare these two monologues and I'll go here. And I got in the room with Carla, and it was... Carla is a magical woman. Carla Nowak is our other acting professor, and she was also one of Theodore Sweat's students, and she is just a magical woman. We got in that room, and she had me work on a Shakespeare piece, and she pulled something out of me. I did a piece from a play that I actually did a year prior, and she pulled some work out of me that I didn't know I was capable of, and I was like, I need to learn more from this woman. And my waiting period wasn't as long as Chelsea's or other students who auditioned in New York, because San Francisco is the last city they come to for ERTA. And so I waited like maybe 2 weeks or a week and a half. Wow. And yeah, I was just at work one day and I got a phone call from Carla and Stephanie, and I was like, okay, so I'm going to Kansas City. That's fun. And so yeah, the rest of my family are still back in Las Vegas in Southern California. And it's just been an honor to be here. I'm so glad I finally get to work on more Shakespeare, because my undergrad focused a lot on contemporary work. Uh-huh. And on a lot of film, because we're an hour outside of LA, so of course we're going to be working on film. And so, yeah.
Yeah, really did.
The program is a really great classical training program, and we study Shakespeare. We've started studying the first folio, which has all of the spellings that Shakespeare did, the punctuation, and we're learning what the punctuation means. And so that's just been a gift to have been studying that and now be able to put it into use and use the first folio kind of as a reference, a guide, and then perform this wonderful play.
She plays the role of Cordelia in King Lear, the rebellious of the daughters. Why such a rebel? What made her such a rebel?
Well, she is King Lear's favorite, and so you would think that he would know that she doesn't play the games that her other two sisters play. But he's descending into madness and slowly losing his mind, so he decides that he needs to be flattered in front of the royal court, and Cordelia's like, I'm not going to do this. I've never been the kind of person that's going to do this. So she takes a stand and really stands up for herself, and she's like, I'm not going to play this game. And he's like, well, then you're not my daughter anymore, and banishes her, takes away her dowry, but then she becomes Queen of France. But then she also dies.
A pretty good deal.
Well, these things happen in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
They're either, what do they teach us in college? They're either comedies, tragedies, or historical dramas. So I guess this is more tragedy, perhaps a little historical drama thrown in there as well.
Tragic. Definitely a tragedy.
Yeah. When the audience comes, they'll get to see some really cool fight scenes as well. Like, we have some pretty epic moments in the show of stage combat with daggers, long swords, and
Do you have a fight coordinator?
Yeah, a fight choreographer. The fights in the show were actually choreographed by Ken Sandberg. He's a student in the third year acting class, and he's also playing Albany, the husband of Cordelia's sister, Goneril. And so he's in the show, but he also choreographed some amazing fights.
Yeah, he's a great fight choreographer.
It's pretty epic.
Sounds exciting. It opens, well, you can see one of the preview performances tonight at the theater on the campus at 7:30 tonight. They haven't, I guess they're trading days off, Tuesday instead of the traditional Monday day off. Performances then continue with the official opening on Wednesday at 7:30, Thursday the 19th at 7:30, Friday the 20th at 7:30, and Saturday the 21st also at 7:30. A special Sunday matinee on the 22nd at 2:00 p.m. on the campus of UMKC at the Spencer Theater, the same place where the rep performances are, and unless the rep performances are downtown, which they also have, it gets confusing. So you need to go to those websites. So info.umkc.edu/theater, or you can go to the Kansas City Actors Theater website, which is kcactors.org, because it's a co-production. And I've noticed over the last few years that UMKC has done more co-productions with, say, The Unicorn.
The Coterie.
The Coterie as well. So you're planning on doing all of those as well?
Yep.
Yeah.
This program is really wonderful because it networks you with three major theaters, like, immediately. So we already are establishing a professional career as students, which is a great opportunity.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
For this first slot, our class was kind of, the two acting classes were kind of split in half. Uh-huh. So half of us got to do King Lear, and the other half got to do a show at the Unicorn, Men on Boats, that closed recently. And so we had about five of our female students in that show, and the rest of us came over here and did King Lear. And so, yeah, we get to do some amazing shows with great theaters around town. And our next show is just going to be the second year acting class. So it'll be Chelsea and I and the other members of our class, the other five of us. And so,
yeah, sounds exciting. I was going to ask you what the next production is, but you sort of named it.
Oh, it's...
No, it's Go Please Go. It's going to be directed by Josh Brody.
Who's written by Emily Feldman.
Yeah, it's a new work and a wonderful director. We met Josh a couple weeks ago when we auditioned, and weeks ago, month ago, I don't know. Time goes by so fast when you're busy.
Sure.
But yeah, we have one day off after King Lear closes, and then we immediately start rehearsing for the next play. So it is a rigorous training program, that's for sure.
Sounds like it is, but very prestigious. Mr. Sweats, when Mr. Sweats was on the air with me once, he said that probably not an evening goes by where somewhere in the world someone who has been in this program is not performing on a stage somewhere.
Yeah,
and that's probably undoubtedly true. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Shakespeare's King Lear, a co-production of the UMKC Theater Department and Kansas City Actors Theater. Performances continue tonight in preview at 7:30 p.m. Regular performances, official opening Wednesday the 18th, Thursday the 19th, Friday the 20th, Saturday the 21st, all at 7:30, and an afternoon matinee on Sunday the 22nd at 2 o'clock p.m. The places to go, the Ticketmaster number, the same that you would call to go to a lot of shows in Kansas City. So specify what you want to see when you call 816-235-6222, or you can go to the Kansas City Actors Theater website, kcactors.org, or you can go to the UMKC Theater Department website at info.umkc.edu/theater. All can get you set up to get you information to see King Lear, Shakespeare's King Lear, a man descending into madness. And he has rebellious children, so it's a lot more contemporary than we would have thought. Thank you so much for being with us. Khalif Gillette, who plays the role of Edmund, and Chelsea Kinzer, who plays the role of Cordelia. Thanks so much for being with us here today. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we're going to talk about, you know, what is a hero? What makes a hero in today's genre? Is it people call athletes heroes? Sometimes they are. Most of the time, not. Who are the real heroes? We're going to talk with Summit Theater. We're going to talk about their production of Wings, an aviatrix who has a sudden stroke. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. We're going to journey on east now. In fact, we're going to go all the way to Lee Summit. We're going to go all the way to the Summit Theater of Lee Summit, Missouri, where they are presenting Wings, the story of a former aviatrix and stunt pilot who suffers a stroke and is plunged into a world of disorientation and grief. A lot of people are having strokes these days. My own mother had a stroke and is struggling with that right now. So it's a story that's contemporary in many ways. With us to tell us all about it, we have Terry Erb, who is the director of the show. He's been on here before when you've directed or performed in things.
Yeah, a couple of months ago I was on.
Yeah, which show did you represent?
Rumors, that the Barn was doing.
That the
I
Barn
came in
was
with
doing.
Bill.
That's right, yeah. And what about Leo Weatherall?
Yes, good morning.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
You are a sound designer?
I'm the sound designer for the show,
referred to by your director as the sound guy?
Yeah. Well, this started out as a radio play in the 1970s, and this version that we're doing was restaged, was rewritten for the stage in the 1980s, so we're trying to bring some of those story elements back in to tell the story of the stroke and the experience to help set the stage and to complete the whole performance.
Sure. We'll get into that aspect in a minute, but let's hear, Terry, about the story. A woman, aviatrix, and stunt woman. In what era is the play set?
Well, he originally wrote it in the 70s, but we're trying to avoid being specific about the time period. The play itself, what inspired Arthur Coppett to write the play is that his father had suffered a stroke, and he found himself in the hospital trying to help his father sort of find his way back to being able to communicate and move, which he was never able to do. But while he was there and helping his father, he met a couple of women who became the inspiration for Emily Stilson, who's the main character of Wings. And he took a sort of a composite of these two women, one of which was actually a barnstormer. And he wrote this play as a radio play, first of all, with these two women in mind. And you really watch this woman's story through her eyes, starting with the very first scene where she has her stroke. And then he's written it in four sections. The first is just called Prelude, and it's you're witnessing her having the initial stroke. And it's pretty real. We take a few liberties with it, but it's a fairly realistic scene. And then the second part is called Catastrophe, and that is where we're literally inside her brain, looking out of her eyes, watching her go through the catastrophic effects of a stroke as it's happening, moment by moment. Then you go through a period where she's been unconscious and taken to the hospital, and while she's lying in bed, we go through a section called Awakenings, which takes us from an unconscious state all the way up to she's back to walking again, she's learning to talk, and then you end up finally with a section called Exploration, where she's now trying to get back to normal.
Did the author, Mr. Coppett, was he able to get this information from the lady you mentioned?
Both of the ladies. There was the barnstormer lady who, unfortunately, from what I understand of what he wrote, he's got about a 10 to 12 page introduction to the play where he tells this whole story. And I believe the barnstormer was not ever, much like his father, she never really got her speech powers back. Very difficult to get anything from her. But this other woman who was a little younger and left-handed, she was able – there's a lot to do with being right-handed or left-handed because of where the speech center is located in the brain. So he was able to communicate with her. And apparently once she started getting better, she had quite a few memories of what it was like to be in this – post-stroke state and what it was like trying to get her memory back, because so much of who we are as human beings have to do with our memories and recollections. And so her one of her paths towards finding her way back had to do with trying to relocate those memories, which some of them had just gotten erased and others were just in different files that she had to find. One of the nice things is we actually had two different ladies who are stroke survivors come into the rehearsals, and they were able to talk to us quite a bit about what it was like for each of them. And they both had two very different kinds of strokes. There's one kind of stroke where it's a blockage of the blood. It comes from a clot in the brain. And then there's another that's an actual rupture. It's called a bleeding stroke. And one of them had one and one had the other, and they were both able to get their language skills back completely and their mobility back, although they still still have a few minor problems, but it's nothing you would notice just talking with them during the day. And they were both able to come in and talk to us. They gave us wonderful insights. The actors were just like sponges, sucking up all this information and trying to apply it to what they were doing. But, you know, once again, at the end of the day, we're telling a story. We're taking some dramatic license, and the way Arthur Coppett has told the story, and the reason I was so insistent on getting Leo involved in this, it's just this huge soundscape, because it started off as a radio play, and it's very disjointed, and a lot of the images that you see are not connected to the sound, and the sound isn't connected to reality. What she's going through, like a lot of times you'll hear the other actors talking to her, but you're hearing it the way she hears it. So they might say, "Can you make ye speechy powers?" Mm-hmm. Which is not obviously what they're saying at all, but you're hearing it through her ears and seeing things through her eyes. So you as an audience member are constantly questioning your own senses, because none of what you're seeing could potentially be real. It might all be a figment of her situation.
And sometimes those figments, as I've learned from the doctors, are so real. They feel like they actually are real. They're not.
Very true.
Very true.
Very true.
Yeah. So you followed, switching back over to Leo now, you have experience in radio, I guess radio theater, things of that nature.
I've gone back to working in this medium since the late 1980s. I started with an organization out of Columbia, Missouri called the Midwest Radio Theater Workshop. Uh-huh. And it's now the I guess the genre would be called audio drama. Mm-hmm. And but primarily as a sound effects and background supporting technical person. So I met Terry through a program that we were doing at Paseo High School for a few years called the Sound Play Audio Theater Workshops, where we were taking the creative writing students with the theater students and the broadcast students and putting them together to create their own short stories that they would tell. And that would kind of reinforce some of their storytelling experience, but also teach the students how to work on mic and how to develop some good skills in that regard.
So it sounded like you had, maybe, with all due respect to the director, you might have had the hardest job here, kind of recreating what she was hearing in her mind. And that had to involve some special recording techniques and things of that nature.
I used a whole lot of collection. I was going through my own loss at the time, not a human loss, but a pet loss. So I was able to bring some of that cathartic emotion into some of the sound beds, but they, some of them are derived organically. Some of them are remote recordings that I've done. I also do ambient recordings in lots of places that I go. So I pulled on that. I pulled on some of the old art that I created 30 years ago with some of the artists that I did to pull some of the screams and emotion in. So,
give us an example, just to help out the audience and myself as well, of something that she heard in her own mind that you recreated and what you had to do to get that.
Well, in the script early on, the first part is us trying to recreate what Arthur Coppett has written as the initial stroke. And really it's, there's her reflective voice, or there's her internal voice, and then there's the outside environment. So I kind of take sounds from each of those three elements and change them in a way so that you may not recognize the common element, or the common element may be over-accentuated. But basically we have to tell the story of her going through the stroke, her being found, her being transported and starting the process of treatment for the stroke. And so that whole sound bed is probably a 4 or 5 minute component that has parts of the cast. We spent a couple hours in the recording studio with the cast recording elements. And so there's her voice elements, there's her disembodied voice elements, there's some of the cast elements that are all reflexive of her voice and her experience. I tried to make it as intensive as an experience sonically as possible. And we have the fortunate ability in this theater space that we're in to really feel and fill up the studio with the sound so that the people feel it as well.
Speaking with two of the gentlemen from the Summit Theater production of Wings by Arthur Coppett, they are the director, Terry Erb, and Leo Weatherall. Am I saying that right?
Weatherall.
The sound guy. The sound designer, I should say, from the production. The show is, I guess there's three more performances left. You've had one weekend so far.
Two shows, yeah.
And you'll have performances on Friday the 20th at 7:30 p.m., Saturday the 21st at 7:30 p.m., and a matinee on Sunday the 22nd at 2:30 p.m. at the Metropolitan Community College Longview Cultural Arts Center on the campus of Longview College in the Black Box Theater. The address is 500 Southwest Longview Road, Lee Summit. If you MapQuest things, you need that zip code 64063. The number to call to get more information is 816-463-2654 or online at summittheater.org or drop by one of the Lee Summit Hy-Vee stores at the customer service desk and ask them about it there. For all that, we're speaking with Terry and Leo about the show. Tell us about the cast. Who is the aviatrix? So who helps her out in the show?
The actress's name is Ellen Deshawn. She's a local, well-known community theater actress. She's been doing it for years. When I was here before, in my earlier life, in the 90s, she and I did quite a few shows together. We go back a long way. And she plays Emily Stilson. And then I have a young woman named Petra, who is playing Amy, the therapist. And then I have an ensemble of two men and two women who are playing multiple roles, doctors, nurses, patients. So they get to change costumes a lot and try to create varying characters and have a good time. So
do we see Emily as a vital woman and then her stroke? How is that played out?
You see a few subtle aspects of the physicality of her stroke, and you see her fighting for words. But he's pretty specific about the fact that what you're watching most of the time is sort of her spirit, not the actual. He says, don't ever put her in a wheelchair, don't ever put her in a hospital gown, because that's not the Emily that the audience is watching. They're watching an Emily who is in her head and a personification of her intellect, and most of the time that you see her, you should not be aware, unless it's a specific scene, like, for instance, one of the therapists comes in and is giving her objects and having her pick them up and name them. And at that point, she has gone to great detail to show you how difficult it is to pick something up, she has one hand that, according to one of the ladies that we talked to, it's like the hand doesn't really belong to you anymore because you can no longer feel it. So she lacks control over that hand. And if she's not paying attention, the hand will drop down to her side and just become dead weight. So there are moments where you see some of the physicality. But we try really hard not to make it a show about watching a person who can no longer be ambulatory or communicative, someone who can, and very often she'll just get up and leave all that behind and talk directly to the audience, especially about her barnstorming. You know, one of the things we discovered in rehearsal was that probably the reason her character makes it as far as she does is because she has this ability mentally to go back to the days where she's out on a plane holding on to the wings doing this crazy barnstorming. And it takes her, we jokingly refer to it as, she goes to her happy place. The lights turn all blue and she becomes very serene and relaxed, and it allows her to slow down and communicate. And I've just given Ellie the license. When you come to those moments, I don't want to see any sort of an invalid whatsoever. I do not want to see your affliction. I want to see the young woman who hung onto a plane and was giddy with fear and excitement. And I want to, because that's the only way we're going to feel your journey, is if we fall in love with you during those moments where you're being a barnstormer and you're doing that thing that you love to do.
See a person that vital, reduced in terms, is a sad thing. How did you prepare Ellen and Petra and the rest of the cast for this?
Well, the biggest thing was bringing these two women in to discuss it, and also the cast. Several of them had their own stories. Bill Bergman is one of our doctors slash patients. His father was, I believe he said, 16 years.
Something like that, yeah.
In a wheelchair after a stroke. Couldn't communicate. And, you know, Bill has had a lot of guilt having dealt with that. And now that he's done this play, he was saying the other night in one of our post-show discussions, he was saying, you know, now that I've done this play, I have a lot better understanding of what my father was going through. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had known then what I know now about it. And maybe, you know, and I think we always, when we look back on those things in hindsight, you know, Leo was talking about having just lost his dog, and I know every time I go through the loss of a pet, there's always a few days where I'm going, I wonder if I had took them for a walk more. I wonder if I had changed their food sooner. I wonder if I had got them to the vet. I wonder if this is really my fault. I think we all go through that self-blaming process and beat ourselves up over it.
That's fairly common. I can tell you that. That happens quite a bit. Yeah.
You know, and the whole reason I moved back here, my mom just turned 87, and I'm back here to get closer to my mom. And it's funny, I always look forward to going home and seeing her. It's about a 2.5 hour drive, and I get there and I enjoy the time. But she's also at an age where it's difficult, you know, and she creates some situations for me where it's really hard, and she puts me in a position of being a parent that I'm not comfortable with. And then I'll drive home, and the whole way home, I'm going, I wish I'd been more patient. I wish I'd been more understanding. When she's gone, I'm going to hate myself for having done this. And I'll replay the whole 2 days that I was there, you know, beat myself up over everything that I felt like I did wrong.
Well, that's common, Terry. I can tell you that.
It's complicated. I do that as well. It's complicated.
There's little signs that you wish you hadn't missed.
Yeah.
That I know now I probably did miss. Yeah. And yeah, we do feel guilty about these things as well. You mentioned earlier two stroke victims came and helped out to some degree.
Yes. Terry Ackerson, who just finished the first two post-show discussions for us, she came in two or three, maybe four times. And not only could she talk to us about the stroke itself and what she went through, but she's also a nurse that spends a lot of time in the ER and has seen stroke victims from the other end of the bed, where she's the one trying to give them care. And she was able to take the cast. She was able to bring in paperwork of what doctors and nurses go through to try to ascertain what type of stroke it was and how big it was. And she was able to give them tons and tons of detail. And then the other lady, who had had more of a bleeding hemorrhage type stroke, she came in and talked us through things. And once again, there were just little subtle things that she talked about that my cast, if it was appropriate to their character, they'd just grasp onto. And from then on, in the next night, and the next night, they'd start to experiment with those ideas and those insights that she brought to it. It's been really, really amazing to be a part of this process.
I'll bet so. And Leo, of course, you depict this through sound, through sounds that she hears in her mind.
And environmental sounds that really to try to replicate the struggles that somebody who has limited hearing or limited sight, who's bound in a physicalist world, so to speak, to try to create that, and then try to represent it in a theater setting to where you can support the production.
Oh, sure.
In a manner that's probably also been challenging.
What I found interesting were how you can say something and they'll hear just the opposite of what you actually said. And that's frustrating for me, but of course, compared to what she's hearing, it's more than frustrating for them.
We're just trying to build up the level of noise underneath that creates a representation of the confusion that they might be feeling with all of the people that are coming and going through the different rehab or scenes as well.
Yeah. I thought it was funny, too. Friday night was our opening night, and before the show, I was out in the hallway with Leo, and he was saying, you know, the one thing that I want out of this is that when the audience leaves, they are exhausted from the sound journey that I take them through, and then the actors recreating that with their performance. I just want them to leave feeling like they've gone through the same journey that Emily has gone through. And then we got to the post-show discussion, and one of the women literally said, was it part of the design that you have some of these sound effects that were so unnerving and so unbelievably uncomfortable that just went on and on to the point that I felt like I was going to have to get up and leave the theater? And I look over at Leo, and Leo went, yep, that's part of the design.
Yeah. Part of the play, really. It. I guess it was written with that in mind. And it's hard to replicate that.
Well, that and I come from a background a long time ago of what used to be known as performance art, where we would go out into the environments and we would try to recreate an artistic impression of a circumstance to unknowing people and kind of catch them unaware in that context. So this has been a fun experience with a theater and a beautiful space that they have out there in that black box to put a nice surround stereo system in. We got four speakers plus some nice subwoofers, and we kind of rattle everybody up pretty well, I think, but not to the point to where I think it overwhelms anything. It's really meant there to be a support to the whole production.
You're hearing what essentially she hears to degrees.
Yeah,
absolutely. To varying degrees. Performances continue this Friday the 20th, 7:30, Saturday the 21st at 7:30, Sunday the 22nd, a matinee in the afternoon at 2:30 p.m. at the Longview campus of the Metropolitan Community College in the Cultural Arts Center, Black Box Theater there, 500 Southwest Longview Road, Lee Summit, Missouri. So you essentially go to the Longview campus and follow the signs to the Performing Arts Center or the Cultural Arts Center, however it's labeled.
It's 10 minutes down the highway on I-470.
Once again, on Friday and Saturday, we'll have post-show discussions again, and we offer quite a bit of information about strokes and stroke prevention and spotting the signs, because one of the big deals with strokes is how quickly you can get medical attention. Mm-hmm. So getting to the hospital very quickly is important. And one of the ladies that came in and talked to us, she was saying one of the biggest problems is you start to get the symptoms, and you might be lucky enough that the symptoms are subtle, so you've got a little time to get there before some major damage is done, but you keep thinking, oh, it's going to go away, it's going to go away. And then the worst thing is you lay down and take a nap. She said, boy, if you think there's something wrong, get yourself in there, because seconds count.
Yeah, there's a 2-hour window, as I understand it. And that's probably pretty much all you have.
Yeah.
But things can be done within that 2-hour window.
Absolutely.
If you pick up.
They can
on
fix
it.
A lot nowadays.
Yeah.
The number to call is 816-463-2654 or online at summittheater.org, or you could drop by one of your Lee Summit Hy-Vee stores. Go to the customer service desk and inquire about picking up tickets there if you want to go. Thanks so much, both of you, for being with us. Terry Erb, the director of the show, and Leo Weatherall, the sound technician for the Summit Theater production of Wings by Arthur Coppett, a former aviatrix and stunt pilot, so a brave woman, suffers a stroke and is plunged into a world of disorientation and grief. And just think how difficult that is. It's hard to put yourself in that spot if you haven't been there. Thanks so much,
both of you, for
being with us. The Jazz Insider is next. Great jazz coming your way. It will be jazz from 1 to 3. Then there'll be the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.